before Zod.
That's kind of ridiculous.
So this is the actual new monitor.
Yeah.
It's a 3440 by 1440 ultra wide. Bezel-less. The back is very pretty.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then I posted up to my old two monitors, raised them, gave myself the swordfish feel. Yeah, it's cool, right?
I guess. Yeah.
Oh, when you turn it on, watch the base. Whoa. Why does it shine a light down on the desk? I don't fucking know, but it's cool.
What is this?
It's really cool. It's, come here. So you can do overclocking and stuff on it?
What? Overclocking on the monitor?
Yeah.
What? I don't even know what that would entail.
Refresh rate.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the gimmick that all the monitors are doing right now is
this
overclocking.
This is absurd.
It's absurdly awesome. Doom looks amazing. All right, I gotta go quiet things. I just wanted to record your reaction. Talk to the microphone.
There's an extra chair here. Is there a surprise guest?
What?
There's no surprise guest, all right? There's an extra chair in here.
There's like 3-4 chairs in there. It's normal.
Okay. Sorry, I can't be funny when Mike's not here.
It's hard, man.
It is hard to work alone. Ugh.
Very difficult to improv alone.
This is just with a microphone. You're doing it on camera.
Yeah. I tried to get creative with cuts and edits, but it didn't work.
All right. Make some noise and slide up here.
That's quite nice. Still a little too sweet.
That's an interesting flavor.
Yeah. So, my goal was...
I don't think this one's too sweet. Maybe yours is.
No, I was really careful with yours. I ruined mine to get yours right. So.
Okay.
This is a home sweet home.
Okay.
So, I was looking at my liquor cabinet and I said, God damn, we've drunk just about all my booze. And I just bought this monitor, so I don't feel like buying any booze right now. So... I said, okay, the only booze I have an ample amount of is this dirt cheap shit scotch that my kid brother bought me like 2 years ago.
Okay.
I've never had. So I thought, okay, my challenge to myself is to find a drink that will taste really good with really shitty booze that Smike will drink. And so I found this. So as I described to you, do you remember how I described it to you earlier today?
It was a mix of artisanal and really cheap.
The exact wording was ghetto and artisanal.
Okay.
So the ghetto, of course, is the really crappy scotch.
Yes.
But what intrigued me was that it called for homemade chamomile-infused simple syrup.
What?
Yeah, which is...
That seems... Okay.
Really easy to make.
Really easy.
Yeah, nice. So Colin pulled me aside after the podcast where I talked about simple syrup, and he's like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. Simple syrup's super easy to make. And he's totally right. So when I told the story about watching the bartenders, I must have been seeing them infuse vodka, because that's more complicated.
Okay.
So simple syrup is literally one part hot boiling water, one part sugar. Boil, stir in, let it sit for 10 minutes. The only extra thing here is you put a couple of chamomile tea bags in it.
So it's just sugary water.
It's just sugary. It's really sugary. It's sweet chamomile tea.
Okay.
Is exactly what it is. But I made it, and there's a whole bunch of it upstairs I have for you because it's apparently really good with gin, they said.
Oh, all right.
So I thought, even if Mike hates this drink, then he gets some pea-colored gin-liciousness. So it's that, and I mean, you saw it. It's the simple syrup infused mm-hmm. with chamomile.
And lemon.
And lemon.
It's very good.
And that's the home sweet home. Hi, we are Buddies in Space. You are...
Enjoying a drink. S. Michael Smith, and you are...
Hi, enjoying a drink. I am M. Michael Carassi.
So what do we got? We've got like a wall of monitor here. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can spend the whole time talking about that, though. It's imposing. It towers.
Well, I've angled the upper yes. monitors downward, so you really get that Batcave kind of feel.
Yes.
And
They loom.
Yeah. I really enjoy it. So now when I'm working, I'll have like Evernote open. I'll have Spotify open. I'll have my to-do list open. I'll have... like 3 browser windows open with different stuff and a PowerPoint. Like I can do all that at the same time, which is actually pretty cool.
Are you turning into Ozymandias?
I like to think that I could be that gymnastically inclined.
His wall of monitors where he mm-hmm. watches like every news channel.
Ultimately, I'm just trying to recreate that scene from Swordfish. But that was 6 monitors, which in like, I don't know, the late 90s, early aughts, that was mind blowing. But the real thing is the ultra wide monitor. I've been wanting one for a while. It's so fucking sweet.
And it's curved a little.
Yes. Right? Yeah, the curved monitors are not actually that curved. Mm-hmm. So as you notice, like I tried to match it with the above monitor just by angling it slightly. But yeah, the curve is very subtle. It's nice.
All right. So here's my
what's your
technophile question for you?
All right.
What's the point? I understand it in this context, mm-hmm. having a slightly curved monitor where you know where the viewer is going to be the entire time.
You're not
going to
ask me what's the point of curved TVs, are you?
I was, yes.
Can I rant?
Sure.
Okay.
Please do.
Gimmicky marketing.
Okay.
There is no fucking point to having a curved television unless it is at least 100 to 150 inches. Because and especially the curve that they use is pretty heavily curved.
Yes, it's very noticeable.
So this is an ultra-wide monitor that is intended for one individual sitting dead center, and it's barely curved. Mm-hmm. And it's IPS, and in-plane switching monitors have a good viewing angle. So these fucking curved 4K screens are super curved, and that just limits the viewing angle severely on a television, which you want as wide a viewing angle as humanly possible.
Well, that's what I always thought.
No, you're absolutely right.
I would see these, and I would be like looking off from off this angle a little bit, and I'd be, this is not a good picture. Why am I supposed to be wanting this? I didn't get it. I thought I was missing some sort of crucial piece of knowledge there.
You are. It's called gullibility.
Ah.
No, it's more immersive if you're in the exact right seat. For a computer monitor, curved makes absolute perfect sense. For a television, you need to be a fucking millionaire to justify having a curved screen. Because if it's 150, you know, if it's like a movie theater and it's curved, yeah, that's fine. Because then everyone benefits, right? You can't have a bad seat because the screen's so big. But yeah. In the average person's home, even an upscale person's home, it makes no sense. Because they don't come that big. Sorry, that's my rant.
No, good rant.
Thanks. There's a slew of these stupid home theater gimmicks that they roll out every couple of years. And it's like, what the fuck, man? Don't sell me a 60-inch 4K screen. It doesn't fucking make any sense. And idiots are buying it for football games. Oh, yeah, look at that football. That football looks extra 4K. I don't know why whatever accent this is. What is this? Southern? Is it Okefenokee?
It's vaguely Southern.
It's vaguely Southern, but difficult to play, so I'm not exactly offending anyone in particular.
Perhaps Northern Louisiana. Not very Cajun, maybe the teeniest bit.
It just has a hint of Cajun on top.
Something.
Y'all like them 4K TVs.
The master of accentry.
I've lost a lot of them.
You have?
Yeah, my British dialects are really slipping. I'm just not using them anymore.
No, I haven't. I've actually had training, but I haven't. Yeah. Haven't done that stuff in a while.
Yeah, well, it takes work. I mean, I trained really hard on the British dialect, in particular, the upper class one.
Mm-hmm.
Shit takes work.
It does.
Sad.
I got notebooks full of what do they call it? The phonetic spellings of everything.
Oh, yeah. Better, butter. Hosanna in the highest. Stock, stalk. Oh, yeah.
So what are we talking about today? We're not talking about politics because I'm just fucking sick of it.
My political interest got pneumonia. Oh, too soon. Well, we've exhausted my wall of monitors. I will say that I went down a very deep hole, as I want to do, with cable management. That's my new obsession. So if you look at the back, it's actually extremely good cable management.
I did not see a lot of cable back there.
I have a what they call a J-shaped cable river coming in the mail tomorrow.
J-shaped cable river?
I believe that's the proper term. It's a massive, it can hold like 14 power cables. It's huge. Because I have
Can you float down it too?
yeah, on a sweet, sweet magnetic interface buoyed by the magnetic fields of the power cables.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why you buy it.
Now that's a lazy river.
Right? Oh yeah, it's the kind you can spill a drink in.
No, I wouldn't.
that's a terrible
idea. That would be not good.
That's not good.
So you just made a purchase, or Erica did.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I had very little to do with it.
Okay.
But yeah, so she upgraded to an S7.
Upgraded to an S7.
From an S5.
Yes. My wife is in the same boat. She was wanting to upgrade to an S7 from an S5.
Such a small upgrade.
It's you say that, but it's still like $500 to $600.
Oh yeah, no, I just mean iteratively, it doesn't make sense to go from an S5 to an S7. It's such a small.
Okay, yeah, small in the terms of features that you get. So I guess she's getting a better camera, which is one of the things she was kind of looking for.
Better camera, water resistance.
That's water resistance.
Essentially it. And I signed her up for the. I think this deal is crazy. But Samsung is giving everyone who buys an S7 or an S7 Edge or a Note 7, although I don't know why anyone's buying a Note 7 right now.
You can't. You actually cannot buy a Note 7 right now. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. But no, I'm going to interrupt you.
Okay.
The interesting thing is the Note 7, everybody knows, well, okay, anybody who's been paying attention to this sort of stuff knows that there was a huge fiasco with the Note 7.
Battery.
The battery was catching fire in a lot of circumstances, and there are a couple of reasons for this. Well, there's really one reason. Do we already talk about this?
I don't think so.
Well, anyway, the manufacturing process was not so good.
Okay.
And because the specifications were so exacting,
right?
Everything was packed in so tightly,
mm-hmm.
More so than previous versions, I guess. There was just the tiniest margin of error,
and they didn't make it
for putting it together, mm-hmm. and not compressing the battery too much to damage it. So this is a theory, this is kind of the working theory of the community right now.
Okay.
So what happened was just slight differences in the manufacturing process, we think, caused those batteries to get punctured or slightly damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And that was enough to cause them to
explode.
Yeah. To catch fire, really.
That one little kid wasn't too badly hurt, I hope.
I don't know. I think that was actually not a Note 7. I think that was a different phone.
No, but it was a Note 7. Well, okay. I only read the initial story, sure. So yeah, yeah. Maybe.
I think that shook out and it was a different phone. But anyway, they're definitely bad. It's a definite problem. Huge PR problem for Samsung.
Yeah.
But you're in terrible shape if you're a Note 7 owner,
yep.
Because you have to return it. Really?
You should by
you means should, of but you can't survival. Get you can't get a replacement Note 7 just yet. So you're kind of in limbo now. You can either return it and just wait.
So this is their Dieselgate.
Yeah. You some carriers, I think, like maybe one carrier was doing loaner phones.
Mm.
A lot of them were just like straight up doing either a refund or an exchange for a different phone. But if you want to know, I really want a working Note 7. Sorry.
SOL.
Yeah. But they are going to be coming out, I think, at the end of this month, the end of September. And the LG V20,
mm-hmm.
which we both kind of have our eye on.
Yep.
Is supposedly going to be released on that same day. The Note 7's come back in.
I wonder what's going to sell better.
that it's interesting that there's a lot of criticism against LG for not getting the V20 out sooner and letting the Note 7 kind of run the market for a while.
And now
kind of things have lined back up magically in LG's favor.
I have come to the conclusion very recently. With the iPhone 7 actually made me really think about this, that the nub of the heart of the problem with all this shit is this ridiculous need for a yearly release cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It is horrifically damaging to innovation, to the market.
Yeah.
If a phone came out when it was warranted and there was enough innovation to fucking justify a new model.
Yes.
Imagine the technology leaps we've been making.
And it gets deeper than that because the unfolding story about Samsung is that they got wind early on that the new iPhone 7 really wasn't that great, really wasn't that innovative, really wasn't that much of a leap from well, much of a step from
from iPhone 6.
Yeah, from the 6.
So they decided not
and
to.
So they rushed the Note 7 to take advantage of that and go head to head with it. And that may have led to the
battery thing.
The whole battery fiasco.
It won't stop the yearly release cycle. People aren't going to look at this and say, "Oh, the answer is to stop forcing out shit phones every year." But no. That's just something I've recently come to notice is, wow, if we just slow down a little bit, maybe we get better shit that wasn't rushed and exploded and was worth paying $600 for.
But anyway, your wife got a new phone. She's happy with it. She loves it.
Yeah, so you horribly interrupted me forever ago.
Yeah.
So right now, Samsung's giving away either. So if you buy a phone up to the first week in October, if you buy an S7 or an Edge or, I don't know, you can find it on their website, you can get either a VR, Gear VR.
Yes.
Which is not that amazing.
It's just a holder, right?
It's got, I'm trying to figure that out. It's like not even acceleration
it's
hardware.
It's like what the cardboard thing you already have is.
It's, you can compare them and they can go head to head and they each have pretty strong cases to why you would use them.
Mm-hmm.
From what I could tell, there is some improved interactivity with it. There's a touch panel on it and stuff like that. What I read did not make me think I was missing anything by not having it. So you can either get that, which
is a like $50 retail
$70. Value. Well, it retails for $100, but I found it for $70 at a lot of places, $70 or $80. Or you can get a 256 gigabyte Evo speed micro SD card, which is retailing for $200.
Which seems really high for that.
It's the speed, I think, that's...
I guess.
But it's just ridiculous that anyone would look at that and be like, I want the headset. But Erica said she saw a bunch of commercials during the Emmys, and it was just them promoting the promotion,
yeah,
but specifically the headset. So it's like, oh wow, this is so cool.
The headset is bigger.
It is bigger.
So you're more by plastic. Volume and by weight, you're getting more.
The box,
yeah,
the heft of the box, you know,
you've got like a thing there.
Yeah, it looks like technology. I mean, you know, the memory card blister packs are annoying. You know, because you look at it and you're like, I had to fucking open
that. Yourself on those.
I have many times cut myself on those things. Yeah.
So there's pros and cons to each one.
Con.
So we recently, my wife was planning to upgrade her phone, and I disappointed her terribly by digging into the new Verizon plans and realizing that if we jump to their new plan, and this is a plan that does not have any offsets for the upgrade of your phone baked into it like all the other plans do.
Right, the Edge plans.
The Edge plan and whatever the one that we had before the Edge plan.
Yeah, I don't
even know. The 2-year contract plans.
The contract plans, yeah.
So if you go to the new plan, it does not have any of that cost baked into it. So if you get a new phone, you just have to buy the whole phone.
You can do a contract, though, still.
Yeah, but it's a wash, really.
$200?
Yeah, you would pay $200 and then you'd be paying extra on top of that for each month.
No, I thought you just pay $200 and you just sign up for 2-year agreement.
Yeah, but that if you do that, it's a higher price than the plan we're on.
Oh.
I know, it's a shell game. You're paying for the phone no matter what, you get it. So we're kind of taking a break from that. And this is the first time in a long time with a Verizon that it's made sense, if you want to save money, to not just get a new phone every 2 years.
Right.
And all the previous plans have kind of had that, well, you might as well get a new phone.
Well, because you were paying for it anyway.
Yeah, you're paying for it anyway.
Right. It's interesting. We've finally reached that nexus of you're actually paying for the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and you always were.
And then you look at it, it's like, that's a $600 fucking phone. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to buy that right.
And I suspect that the phone, the carriers looked at this and said, how much are we actually making after we've subsidized these phones?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, it's a shell game on both sides.
Yeah.
So why don't we just make people actually... But this could be good, because if people start saying, holy fuck, I don't want to pay $600 for a phone, then they say, oh, okay, well, maybe it does make sense to not upgrade every 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, assuming your phone doesn't start to mysteriously break down in exactly 2 years and a day.
I don't know.
I'm convinced the silicone just ages at exactly 2 years.
Anyway, I'm still loving my aging LG G3, which is still plenty fast. And it's got a good screen, 5.5-inch screen. And I don't have any problems with it. It's got the removable battery that I love. It's got the SD slot. So all good. I think if I find like a super screaming deal on the V20, I might get it, but I'm not in a rush.
I'm waiting a year. I'm waiting until I've paid off my note.
Okay.
And then I'm going to look and say, I mean, it'll have been out for, at that point, almost
a year.
And there'll
be a V30 out.
Yeah. And then I could say quad deck or octo deck. At that point, my ears can't fucking tell, so I'll just take the quad for a little bit less. I think we may have actually gotten to the point where, because the innovation is slowing and the technology is so good in these phones, they may get a longer lifespan now. And I wonder if it's related.
Well, my two-year-old now G3 is still... I don't have any problems running anything that I've tried on it.
Right, but if you go back to, like, the previous generation, like, yeah, if you went back 2 to 4 years and compared those phones, mm-hmm, there's a big jump.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you went back to the phone, I was just talking about this with Eric a little while, like, earlier tonight. If you went back to the phone we had 4 years ago and compared it to the one we had 2 years ago, like, it would be painfully slow.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But I feel like we've reached that point where it's like, oh, all right, these phones are... They all got the same fucking Snapdragon processor. It's really fast. It's an octo-core or a quad-core or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really cramming much more into these. You know what I mean? I'm seriously wondering...
But they benchmark higher.
It's all artificial. I don't know anyone. I don't actually know anyone who's like, yo, I just ran 3DMark on my phone. You know why no one does that? Because there's no fucking point. Because everyone has the exact same fucking phone. When I put the 1080 in my computer, I ran 3DMark. Totally knowing that I had no context for the score. Like, that's the thing, is I didn't even run it before I swapped cards. I was just doing it to be funny. So I bought the card from Nero, my coworker. So I put the 1080 and I ran the test and I said, hey, I got a 10,000 whatever in 3DMark. He said, oh, it's good. What was your old score? I was like, oh, I don't fucking know. He's like, wait, why'd you run it? I'm like, just to tell you that I ran it. But the whole point of benchmarking is you need to be able to compare it. And you need to be able to upgrade parts so you get a sense of your improvement. There's no fucking point to benchmarking a phone. Ugh. All right, let's step back from mobile technology.
Okay, gladly.
We have committed a grievous error.
We did. And we're rectifying it right now.
Because we saw an outstanding motion picture achievement.
Yes. And I will say that if you, it's a cliche, but...
Are you going to say it? I know you're going to say it.
If you're going out, if you go out to a movie theater only one time this year...
If you go to one movie in a movie theater this year...
Because this movie, more than any other movie I've seen in years...
More than any other movie in decades...
Warrants seeing it in an actual movie theater.
Must be seen with your butt in a movie seat.
Because it is visually astounding.
It's really good and pretty. And that would be Kubo
and the two strings.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Is that hyperbole or?
It is hyperbole, but I think it's warranted. Rarely do I think it's warranted. Like, Captain America: Civil War was a fun movie, right?
And
there are benefits to seeing in the theater. It's loud. In that case, there was a splash page fight scene, so it kind of made sense for a widescreen. But a lot of the time, I feel like a lot of movies at this point in this day and age with the home theaters we have don't really warrant going to the movie theater.
Yeah.
But something, this felt like a spectacle, Kubo.
And I agree.
What Studio Leica does with stop motion, like, because I've said that to people and they're like, oh, stop motion. Like, it's not fucking Gumby, dude. This is groundbreaking, millions upon millions of shots, you know, 3D printing, ridiculous attention to detail.
Yes. And, okay, visually, it's great. I think you need to see it twice. We've only seen it once.
I would like to see it again, definitely.
I think you need to see it once, and then after you've seen it, go watch the two or three videos out on YouTube about how they made it, and then go see it again.
And then gain that extra level of appreciation. Yes. Because, well, I think what you're getting
without giving any of the big scenes away.
Well, I mean, the trailer did a lot of that, but...
It has, and this is,
I think, why I love it more than anything. Like, I really love Paranorman, and I put that slightly above this, but very slightly. But the story...
Not on a technical level, though.
No, not on a technical level. On a story level. But the storytelling house style of Studio Leica is awesome. because they do children's stories that are dark.
Yeah.
That are a little bit on the, we're going to, you know, give you the feels in a way that kids don't really feel anymore. Like, mm-hmm. would probably throw a trigger warning and a safe space up for this movie, you know, in today's standards. Fucking millennials. But I was tearing up for half the movie. And part of that's being a parent. I will tell you, being a parent definitely had an effect there with this movie. But it's sad. It's fucking sad at times. And it did not detract from the movie. It only enhanced it. You know? And it wasn't like watching fucking, I don't know, The Horse Whisperer. I don't know. Is that sad? Is The Horse Whisperer sad?
I've never seen The Horse Whisperer.
What's the name? Jesus Christ. Schindler's List. It's not like watching Schindler's List where the sad thing is the movie. Right? There's just an element of sadness to it that's intrinsic to the character arc.
Yes.
And I thought that it was very well handled, and I very much look forward to showing it to Simon when he's like 7.
Yeah.
You know, just at that point where, like, he's going to get that there's some darker elements, but he's not going to be too young to be afraid.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's
bad things happen in the movie.
Bad things. There are bad fucking characters in that movie.
Yes.
And they're badass, but they're bad.
Yes. But what they did, and I say to see it twice, because there are things that happened while we were watching it the first time that I didn't have nearly the appreciation of until afterwards when I saw how they did it.
I haven't actually done that, so apparently you have a whole level.
Well, you saw the one part right at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where they... I don't know what that was. You made like this really weird hand gesture.
I'm trying not to give anything away.
It was a very large figure or character. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing. That's what this is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
You get it.
And the way they did this, they did it physically. They had a giant model of this thing. And for more than one thing.
Yeah, because the thing they show at the end of the film, you're not talking about the stinger.
Joke. I'm talking about that.
Oh. That's not... Oh, I'm sorry. So the scene that it was referring to is not at the end of the movie, but the behind-the-scenes thing about it.
Yes.
Yeah, so every Studio Leica film, as far as I know, does a stinger, which is how they filmed one of the most impressive elements.
Right.
And it's done showing you, you know, the behind-the-scenes thing.
Right, yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was fucking awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I saw another clip on YouTube, and don't go out there and look at this. Seriously, don't until after you see the movie.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But after seeing it the first time, then go and look at this stuff.
I liken it to Mad Max in the... Wow, how
the
they
new
do that.
Mad Max.
The new Mad Max. Apparently, the new Mad Max, you can watch it now without the special effects added. And apparently it's actually more impressive when it's the pure practical effects before they layered the CG on.
Huh.
Which I believe, because they had Cirque du Soleil performers as the polecat. I mean, they really went all out with the practical effects in that movie. But... There's the element of this is a spectacle in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
And it when spectacle enhances the story, that's when it's good.
Yep.
When spectacle replaces the story, that's when it's bad.
Right.
And in both these movies, right, you have a situation where the spectacle absolutely enhances the story. And then going back afterwards, doing what you're saying, right, and seeing how they do it, then it's like, holy shit. Because I really feel like you have an emotional investment in the spectacle at that point.
Yes.
And then it's more impressive.
Yeah. This isn't giving anything away, but early on, there are some scenes where they're in the water mm-hmm. and there are like giant waves coming, and that's all just physical things.
I was staring at the water. I just was like, how are they cheating on this? Because I don't think they cheat.
They're not. They don't.
Yeah, they don't cheat. So, all right, let's take a step back because a lot of people have no idea or no interest. So this movie is extremely highly rated on like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic.
Yes, but like every other Studio Leica film.
Okay.
Like every other Studio Leica film. Are we okay there? Are you looking something up?
I was going to look up if the score has dropped. Sometimes the Rotten Tomatoes thing is crazy high.
It just doesn't do that well in the theaters. They're not like massively... They're not like a Pixar film.
No. You're right.
And I think part of that is that the average person, when they go and see it...
It's still 97%.
Yeah.
And it's been out for months now. That's incredible. Wow.
When the average person looks at it or looks at the trailer, they're like, well, this doesn't look as good as Pixar.
Right.
Because it's not the same thing.
It's being done by hand.
But it is. It's all being done by hand. But even the fact that, like, it looks anywhere close to something from Pixar is incredibly impressive.
You could convince someone it's a stylized Pixar.
Yeah, you really could.
Which is a shame because...
Which is probably what most people think it is.
Right, which is a horrible disservice. But let's sell it to someone who's not interested. How about that? So let's stop gushing for a second. Just think about it. So it's the hero's journey through and through, right?
Yes.
It's a YA novel in the good sense. So it's a young boy with a destiny and mystical powers who's kind of hiding out because that's what every kid in that situation does.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up on an adventure and discovers things about himself and his past. And it is a boy, in case you're wondering.
Yes.
Because there was a lot of debate.
We were a little confused initially.
About what Kubo was in terms of gender. Not that it matters, but we were really curious.
Yes.
And okay, so it's a Joseph Campbell adventure film. Right? And it feels familiar in that sense. And it also, what I think they did, and you would possibly know more than me, but they managed to make a new Asian myth.
Yeah, I'm not aware of this actual story being lifted from anything.
It seemed like it pulled elements. Like, I felt like it kind of was like,
it
let's
feels
take,
like it
let's
does,
take some Monkey King-esque stuff, yeah. But not literally the Monkey King. Let's take a specific samurai or ninja character and put him in, but not really that character.
As far as I can tell, this is a completely original story.
Right.
With influences from other...
Heavily influenced.
Other
but,
myths and stories.
But that's what myth is. I mean,
yeah, sure.
I mean, that's how myths... People forget this. It's like myths... starts somewhere. The fact that we live in a day and age where myths, other than like a Neil Gaiman-esque writing style, myths don't really come about anymore, ignores hundreds of thousands of years where mankind was like, we need a new myth to explain something we don't understand, so let's just fucking take other myths and mash them up from other cultures. Yeah, we got an explanation now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's how it happens. So in that way, it's really exciting. But it is an adventure story. It is steeped in homemade mythology, which is awesome because when you do that, and you're very careful, then you adhere to your own mythos, and that creates its own, my theory, creates its own gravity.
Yes.
And I think that's engaging. When you're feeling like everything in this world serves the same purpose. The story, the myth, the characterization.
The theme, and there's a strong theme line through it.
Yeah.
It is very, and I mean this in a good way, and this is from somebody who doesn't have kids. It's very focused on family and family relations.
And how they can
the
be
strength
toxic
of those.
Or how they can be toxic.
Yeah.
And the lengths a parent needs to go to address a toxic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool. So.
So yeah, there's good in it. It's rich. There are lessons to be learned. But, you know, it's not beating you over the head with anything.
No, there's tons of the feels, but there's not tons of after-school special kind of aspects to it. In the end, it feels familiar in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But in not the, I've seen this before ways, in the this just feels right kind of way.
Yes.
And that's a distinction. And you know, I think if you think about it, that makes sense. Like, I think we've experienced that before. Not in the Star Wars Force Awakens way, when it's like, this is literally the first fucking Star Wars movie again. You know, it's like, there's a lot of elements here I'm picking. Yeah, but they're coming together differently. You know, it's like taking a puzzle. It's taking a bunch of puzzles you like and then rearranging the pictures into a new one. The pieces into a new one, you know? And I fucking hate puzzles, but you know what I mean. It's like, oh, this is cool. It's like, there's another side. Holy shit, I never did this puzzle before.
Oh my God, it's the upside down.
Oh, Stranger Things. So, anything else about Kubo? Other than how awesome it is?
No, it's great. It's
there's some
go
great,
see it.
There are some amazing fight scenes.
These films that and going back, Coraline was I thought it was excellent.
Coraline
was a little uneven.
It's based on a Neil Gaiman story.
Yes.
So that was an adaptation. So there's certain inherent flaws with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Coraline was a lot of fun.
It's dark.
It's very dark. It's not without, certainly not without flaws, but yeah, really cool. Paranorman was their second film, and you rate that
that's
highly.
The pinnacle for me, I think, and Erica too. We both agree that that's the absolute top of the heap of Leica, and only in terms of story and character, not in terms of special effects, which are still really good.
Yes. And again, that was very dark thing. Unpleasant things happen.
It's about a kid who sees ghosts. It's basically the Sixth Sense, the children's story.
Yeah.
But it was really, really fun. And it had a really nice progressive character.
Yeah. Well, there's a...
People were up in arms about.
I know, the very last like line of the whole movie, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally just fucking turns as like, fuck you, conservatives. Like, where did that come from? And then from there, they stumbled.
Yeah, we haven't actually seen Box Trolls because it just looked awful.
I don't recommend it.
Ad campaign was terrible. It made it I really don't want to watch this.
I really feel like it was a mismatch of ideas that they just couldn't get to come together properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still an enjoyable film, and if anyone else made it, it'd be really impressive. But when you look at the pedigree of Leica and then you see what they did after this, it's like,
mm-hmm.
What were you guys smoking? I mean, so were you smoking PVC? Were you smoking the angel dust? So, yeah, it was not amazing. But
Would you recommend it just on its technical merits?
No.
No?
No. I mean, if you see Paranorman, I don't think there's enough distance. You know what it is? Paranorman is the Galaxy S1. and then Box Trolls is S2. The innovative thing was S1. S2 is just trying to one-up it slightly.
Okay.
All right? To tie back to cell phones.
Sure.
But no, I think you see Coraline because it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a really like good female lead character, and you don't see that a lot.
Right.
And then Paranorman's phenomenal. And in basically every way, it's more or less the perfect movie. Box Trolls, you could probably skip.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it brought anything to the table that you need to see. And then you can tell that they wanted to redeem themselves. Because also, a stumble for Studio Leica is rough because that's like 2 to 3 years.
Yes.
Non-stop working with their hands.
Yeah. And one more little tidbit is they do... So film runs at 24 frames per second.
Mm-hmm. Not 30. Common misunderstanding.
People think it's 30?
Well, because they see the 3-2 pull down and it converts it to 30 or 60. Oh. And then they think, okay. Oh, everything runs... No, it runs at 24.
Yeah. So different... types of different studios, stop motion studios, will run at different frame rates.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what exactly the old Wallace and Gromit's were, but they were not 24. They were less. They were like maybe 15 or 20 at the most. No, they always
felt wrong. Not in a way that wasn't, that made it unenjoyable, but yeah, there was like something, yeah, we call it like laggy now. I feel a little laggy.
12 is kind of a common one because it's half. It's
right. Right.
Yeah. One shot for every two actual frames. But they did Kubo and I think probably the other ones. Definitely Kubo. I'd have to go back and look at the other ones. But Kubo definitely is at the full 24 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
So they do, for every second of film, they do 24 shots.
24 separate, slightly altered shots.
Yes.
That they are by hand bending over a fucking film board and like tweaking very, very slightly.
Yes.
It's crazy.
It's an insane amount of work. And that's, you know, not considering however much they're like, nah, we're not going to use this scene. Just,
that's going to hurt. I bet at this point they're really fucking efficient. They're like, okay, we will have zero cutscenes at this point.
That's got to be heartbreaking, man. They cut a scene that you worked like for 8 months on.
But you can imagine like them like being the Studio Leica guy who had a scene cut, talking to a friend who doesn't know. He's like, "Dude, I just had 8 minutes of my film cut." He was like, "Oh, that sucks." It's like, "No, like I'm on the verge of suicide right now." And the guy's like, "What are you talking about? Like I'm going to kill myself over 8 minutes of footage." God, well, think about that. So 8 minutes times 60.
Yeah, better do it on your...
No, it's 540. So it's 8 minutes times 60 is 8, 16, 20, 30, 40, 48, 60. So 640. So it's 640 seconds
mm-hmm.
times 24 shots. Okay, yeah, now I got it. 24 frames per second times 640 seconds. So 8 minutes of footage is 15,360 separate shots.
That's It's absurd.
And you can't just go ahead and like randomly be like, I'm gonna move your arm here. Like you have to map all that shit out.
They do.
So that is 15,360 mapped out, storyboarded, really thought out, intricate shots that would go that's horrible. 8 minutes of work is that's like 8 months. I actually knew what their conversion rate was. I looked it up at one point, how much time it took to produce a minute of footage, and it was something god-awful. It was weeks, if not a month. It was insane.
But yeah, please go see it.
I told you about everything I learned about the Robot Chicken Stop Motion Gypsies, right? Did I tell you about
this? I think so, yeah.
Did I ever talk about it on here?
Yeah, they're like, I don't know, we can do a little bloop about them.
So stop motion is obviously a very dying art. There's very, very few people. So like Robot Chicken and Studio Leica are the two, I think, biggest houses doing it.
Yeah, on like polar opposite ends of the technical scale. Oh, yeah.
Action figures making poop jokes and high art. But so I still have, I think, very, very good headshots. Like the best headshots I ever got. I still use them, even though I'm clearly a little older than the pictures now, but I'm not acting, so I just use them for LinkedIn and shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw a picture of a girl from Heroes, and I loved the headshot, and I'm like, I don't care how much it costs, I'm going to get that headshot photographer. And she was amazing. Timothy Jane Graham. I think she's still a headshot photographer. Timothy with an I. So I booked her, and she's like, okay, we got to get up at like 6 a.m, go down to the meatpacking district. I need this half an hour of light that you can only get.
Wow.
Yeah, she knew what she was fucking doing. My pictures look awesome. But her boyfriend worked on Robot Chicken. He did the explosions. Every time he saw an explosion in Robot Chicken, he was the guy who did it. And he's like, yeah, it's really time consuming.
Like a lot of cotton balls.
I think there was some CG involved at that point. But he's like, it's still really, because you have to integrate it with stop motion.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was telling me all sorts of crazy stories. He's like, so here's the deal. So basically, there is a band of gypsies that are the contracted stop motion guys.
Like actually from Eastern Europe, right?
No, they're just vagabonds who roll in and then roll out as a group. And
okay.
So they kind of just are just like gypsy. They're just like, okay, we're here. You contracted us. If you piss us off, we're gone. And there have been times at Robot Chicken, it would just shut down for days or weeks because someone had offended one of them and they would just leave.
I thought they were actually from a different country. And
they are. Okay. I don't think they're actually Eastern European gypsies.
So where are they from?
I don't know. I just don't think they're actual gypsies. You know, it's funny. Gypsies were Egyptian. That's where the name comes from.
What?
That, where they were thought
to be
Egyptian.
Blew my mind, man.
Gypsy comes from Egyptian, but it's like a mystery. It's like calling Indians, Native Americans, Indians.
Okay.
It's, I don't know. There's a weird etymology to it. Anyway, so I thought the funniest thing was, so he goes, yeah, so basically this is extreme, and I don't know how Studio Leica handles this. Maybe they do this too. But the Robot Chicken guys, these gypsies who do the stop motion, just drink alcohol. Incessantly. And to the point where he goes, no, you don't understand. Like when I say they drink on set, I mean that they have rolling bars. So when they show up, and this is how you know you've pissed one of them off, because they'll pack up these, you know, those giant like musical instrument, like tour cases. They're on wheels and they open like, mm-hmm. like armoire.
Right. It's look like they're almost like armored.
Exactly. Things. But but in their case, they're filled with bottles of alcohol and they just get ice buckets lined up and they just fucking drink and painstakingly, film these stop motion things. So he's like, yeah, so these guys roll in. They're really not nice to talk to half the time. And you don't blame them because their job's really tough. They're drunk all the time. And then if you anger one of them, they will collectively leave without saying a word. And you just wait for them to come back and try to smooth things over. So I thought that was fascinating. But I don't know.
I feel like Leica's got to be a little bit of a different environment.
Yeah.
A little more everybody's in-house and on the same team. And
well, they have a sense of humor. I mean, just to do the stinger, like there's a gag at the end of the stinger. And it's like even that still took days to do this tiny gag at the end. You know what I mean? Like Pixar doesn't do that. I mean, Pixar does gags. They don't take that long to do a gag.
Right.
So yeah, there is an investment in the craft you just don't see anymore. It's just really rare, you know.
So go see it.
Go see Kubo.
Because we want to see their next movie. And we want this one to be as profitable as possible so they'll make an even better one next time.
It's at 97% on Rotten Tomatoes still. That's huge.
It's huge on as a review, but it doesn't really translate
to box office. Well, I'm just trying to get the five people listening who haven't already seen it.
Go see it. Everybody who's seen it thinks it's great.
Yeah, I haven't met anyone who. Yeah, because when I posted about it, I did a hyperbolic plea for people to see it, and then the few people had were like, it's amazing. Yeah, everything about it's great. But it, I will buy it. I will own it. I don't say that very much anymore. There's no need to own things like movies
yes.
nowadays, but that is something I will absolutely fucking own. Probably in 3D. Because then you could watch it without 3D, but you know. So, and we watched another movie last night.
Yeah, we saw a Japanese animated film.
Also known as an anime.
Yeah. It was a full feature-length film. It was called The Boy and the Beast. It was from the same director whose name I don't remember.
Beast and the Boy.
The Beast and the Boy, The Boy and the Beast, whatever.
I think Beast and the Boy.
There's Beast
better.
And Boy.
Beast Bee, Beast Bee.
You can find Beast it easily Boy. Enough. I thought it was excellent. It was a very rich, complex story.
Another film that was like, we're just going to kind of take familiar elements of mythology, but just make our own fucking thing.
Yeah.
And like right off the bat, they're like just in your face about like, this is what's going on. And we're not going to explain why this is. We're not really going to even get into it. Just accept it. And the movie is really good for it.
Yeah. There were things that like didn't get, you know, backstories and bits that didn't really get explained, but you didn't really need it.
Because everyone accepted it. It was just part of the mythology,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I thought was cool.
It was very, very character driven.
Yeah.
All the characters were, I mean, there was action and, you know, exciting things happening, but it was really, 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 really all about characters.
And again, about family.
Yeah.
Very strongly about family.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I strongly recommend it. It was by the same director and writer of
Summer Wars. And One Piece, apparently.
Yeah, and One Piece, and he like did... don't take this as a knock against him, but he did like a couple of... One or two of the Digimon movies.
Yeah, Erica said that.
And as I understand it, I haven't seen these, but one of the Digimon movies... was kind of the prototype for Summer Wars.
Oh, really?
So if you see both of them, you're like, this is like exactly the same story. That's weird. Summer Wars was amazing.
Summer Wars is in my top 3 to 5 all-time favorite anime.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's up there with Akira. Probably Record of Lodoss War, which I know...
Yeah.
I know that's not actually that good, but I saw it. That was like my first anime other than Akira, so it's got like such a special part of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But it's up there. I it's just like with Kubo. I fucking loved Beast and the Boy, but Summer Wars is a little bit above it.
Yeah.
But that's just because it's so damn close to perfection as an anime.
Yeah, I think on a technical level, I like Summer Wars more because yeah. visually there's a lot more stunning stuff that happens.
Well, the premise, the video game premise yeah. of it, the Matrix-y video mm-hmm. game kind of thing, I also spoke to me a little bit more, you know.
But at the same time, again, that is family is a huge, huge, huge important part of that movie,
even more overtly.
Oh, yeah.
Not that it wasn't in this, but it was like very much like, it is about the whatever
it family. Is about this family.
It's about this family yeah. and everyone around them and their kind of gravitational pull of this fucking family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a great movie. But I enjoyed so many elements of it. The relationship between the two main characters, the two random other characters that are always hanging around.
Yeah, yeah.
We discussed that during the movie. We were like, what the fuck is their deal? I mean, it's funny, but they're just always around. In a way that you only ever see on TV or in movies. Like, the friends thing. It's like, what the fuck do they do? Like, they don't have anything else to do but hang out in each other's apartments all the time. And I like that they stayed away from what... There were not a lot of cliches
no.
in this movie. I think they avoided... In The Beast and the Boy and the Beast, Beast and the Boy. I think they avoided a lot of cliches. Because anime, you know... A lot of cliches in anime.
Yes. The movie kind of... It does a lot of things that you're not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
So, excellent film. There are a couple of other films by this director that I would very much like to see. The Girl Who Jumped Through Time, or something like that.
Fell Through Time?
Fell Through Time.
Familiar.
The Girl Who Something Something Time.
Leapt Through Time.
Leapt Through Time? Okay, I think that's one of his.
It's anime, definitely. Drama, film, romance. Yeah, because he always puts romance in his stuff.
What's the director's name of that?
Mamoru Hosoda.
Yeah, I think that's him.
Yeah, that's him.
That's another very, very highly rated film that we have not seen yet, but would very much like to.
Yeah, it's back in 2006.
So there you go.
What are your top anime?
My top anime?
Oh, because you've seen a god-awful lot. So that's probably a really hard
Summer Wars is up there. Mm. Almost anything from Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, you're a big Studio Ghibli fan.
there's this one Studio Ghibli film, and I can never remember the name of it.
How's Moving Totoro?
No. It's like the most unspectacular movie you can imagine. You're just going to get the list of his stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help you out. It's a story about this woman who travels back to the place from her childhood. And there's hardly anything in this. I mean, there are a couple of scenes where they do some neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mostly just a straight-up movie about characters who are having very realistic conversations.
Only yesterday?
Yes, only yesterday. Okay. And it's like this like super sleeper, underappreciated, but just it's just such a good story.
It has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I believe it. Wow. I believe it. But again, it's not a spectacle. It's just a really, really good story.
And that's something even I like didn't understand when I was younger and getting into anime. Is anime that it's a very powerful medium, and like people outside of this country know that a lot better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think most Americans, at least 10 years ago, maybe now it's come a little ways, and the understanding with millennials being ingrained is more. But like anime does not have to be spectacle. Anime can be an absolutely legitimate way of telling a dramatic or moving or whatever story. It's just not so much in the U.S.
Yeah,
you know.
And Spirited Away is maybe my co-favorite Studio Ghibli film.
Really?
I don't know. I put that ahead of Princess Mononoke.
I did not like Princess Mononoke, but I saw the dub. I think that.
Yeah.
I was watching dubs at that point. I didn't know better.
Yeah.
I just noticed that they have all these crazy high Rotten Tomato scores, except for they did Tales from Earthsea.
Yeah.
And it's apparently really bad.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Which is fine. Apparently you shouldn't, because it's apparently really, really bad. Man, that is a cursed...
Satoshi Kon movies are excellent. The late Satoshi Kon, who did Perfect Blue.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it. That's older, right?
Yeah, that's 80s? Older. Probably 80s.
Okay. Like really thin people?
Yeah, it was a little thinner style.
Yeah, I remember that was a style.
He did Paranoia Agent, the series. He did a great movie called Paprika.
I've heard of all these.
An excellent movie called Tokyo Godfathers, which is another film that's not, you know, a super spectacle thing. It's much more realistic. Mm. No magical things happening.
Did you ever see there? So Cartoon Network introduced me to anime. They just started doing anime all of a sudden and like late at night.
Mm-hmm.
So they show like a TV cut of Akira, which was actually not very censored. Now that I think about it. They showed some Record of Lodoss War, and then they showed this thing. It was a series of, I think it was very Ray Bradbury-esque, where they're actually adapting some of his stuff, but it was a series of short stories about robots.
Are you talking about the Matrix shorts?
No, not Animatrix.
Okay.
No, this is older. But it was like, there was definitely one that was a Ray Bradbury short story, because I read it later.
These were
slow, really like poignant stories.
But they're all different styles, right?
Yes. Yep.
I think I've seen that.
It was like that really fucked with me.
It was really cool.
It was cool, but as like a 13 or 14 year old, I was like, wait, this isn't like guys powering up for 2 days and then fighting.
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on?
There was one that was if it's a thing I'm thinking of, there was one of them that I remember the most, which is just really fun and kind of cute. It was this like giant mech battle, but it was like really really like almost medieval tech. It was like a bunch of people running around with in these things that were built out of wood and bits of iron.
Huh. I'm gonna try to find it. Okay, that's not. It's been a really long time since I've seen it.
Okay.
The only one I remember that really fucked with me, because again, it was just not. It was like sad, but like a guy, two friends are like creating androids, and one creates one that he falls in love with, but he's like appalled with himself, and then he like pushes her away, and then he's an old man, and he finally falls in love with her as he dies. It was really fucking sad. And I was like, what is going on here? Why? I just watched Akira. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's like Robot Story. Robot Carnival.
Oh yeah, Robot Carnival. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's it. That's the fucking picture. It still gives me the willies. This thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, holy shit. That's right. Robot Carnival. I don't know if it's that amazing. Yeah, that's old. But it's one. Yeah, it is old. Yeah, they picked the most random things to show on Cartoon Network to get anime going in the U.S. It was like Record Lotus War, Akira, and Robot Carnival. Tetsuo, Canada!
Yeah, but then everybody was into Dragon Ball Z. And
That was the problem, is that shit was the stuff that caught on. And then, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon and...
Well, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon are completely different.
Well, they came later.
Yes.
But I'm just saying, the things that caught on that most people would be like, oh, anime, like, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
They're not going to say, like, Robot Carnival.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So anyway, anything by Satoshi Kon.
Okay.
Just about anything by Studio Ghibli. Anything by the guy who did Summer Wars, whose name I can never remember. And Beast and the Boy. Yes. Just look up Summer Wars.
Yeah. I fucking love Summer. That was one I bought because I loved it so much on Blu-ray. I was like, I need to own this because this is that good.
You can just borrow an hour whenever you want.
Yeah, no, but there's some things that I just still get that urge to be like, this is so sublimely good to me, that I want to own it.
Fair enough.
And this is the guy, I own fucking Blue Crush and Knock Around, guys. So there was a time where I was not very discerning about what I bought. We have talked about Knock Around. Bringing that back up to point out that I wish to God Best Buy still did that fucking trade-up program. But I was not discerning in my purchases for many, many years in my high amounts of disposable income. So now I'm much more selective because, again, with between Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and fucking the internet in general, you really don't need to buy things too much to have access to them legally.
To have access to them, but to have something that looks decent.
For me, it's sound.
We're going to really get into, the difference in quality between Blu-ray and streaming.
Which I still, like, well, okay.
I think we're both on the same page.
No, we absolutely are, and it boggles my mind, but at the same time, I get it. Like, both of our wives are like, well, why not just watch it on Hulu if it's still on high definition? But it's like, well, there's different kinds of HD. There's different codecs, and then the audio is never uncompressed in streaming.
You can tell!
Oh, God, yeah, you can fucking tell if you're listening, but... There were times I'd be sitting there before Time Warner got really good about getting all their channels in HD. I'd be sitting there like, fucking standard. Why is this in standard definition? Why is this fucking going HD? My wife's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this isn't standard definition. She's like, what? I think she would notice now, but there was a long couple of years there where I'd just be grumbling to myself and she'd be like, I can't even tell what you're talking about. I get it. And then audio, it's a trained ear thing. But you made a good point. The less compressed, like DTS Master Audio, HD Master Audio, is extremely uncompressed. It's a way better sound for someone who doesn't hear as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a legitimate thing. Brom, 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 brom. Remember the DTS, the strings? When you, like in the early to the early aughts, they would say, like, you knew you were watching a DTS movie because they do the
sound. Yeah, they all strings. Had their different, the Dolby... Whatever sound
they changed, they changed them out a couple of years and they're really dumb. They're like the little like ads for there, but that one was the best one because that was when 5.1 was just coming into its own.
Yeah, and what was the one? I think one of the early ones was just like the kind of like swelling sound.
Yeah, and it was just deafening. They just went with the overwhelm your senses kind of thing.
Yeah,
I'll never forget. I don't love it talking about the podcast. Forget. I'll never forget. too recent. We were watching the movie that my friends. So I was the home theater guy in college, right? And I didn't have good.
Back when it was like much easier.
What do you mean?
You didn't have to worry about like which codec was being used.
And oh yeah, no.
Is it 5.1? Okay, good. You're fine.
Are we? Is it 5.1 DTS or THX, or are we talking Dolby Digital? Okay, is it Neo ES 6.1? Is it Matrix? Is it Virtual? But so I was the guy who would go to his house and watch movies in my room. I had my home theater in my room because, you know, we didn't have communal setup for some reason. But the movie that everyone finally got the beauty of 5.1 was fucking Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
What?
I know. That had, so not only did I have T-Bone Burnett's amazing soundtrack, which to this day is, I think, outstanding, and I have it in, it's like crazy high resolution because it's really that good, but it had a really good, looking back, had really good sound mixing for the time with surround sound. So there's a scene, so picture this. So we're all sitting there. It's like eight people. It's on my floor. It's on my bed. I'm in my recliner. We're watching TV, and we're all facing the TV, and my windows of my room are to the left of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
As it happened, there's a scene in the movie where they go to the house. Remember the R-U-N-O-F-T?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you have? Oh, I know, my I fucking seen God, it. Dude. Holy shit.
Just tell your
shit.
Story.
There's a scene where someone...
Without giving it completely away.
It's the Odyssey, Smike.
Yeah.
It's a Deep South version of the Odyssey. Yeah. I ruined it all for you.
I knew that already, honestly.
It's a movie you have to experience. There's nothing to ruin. But there's a scene where someone unexpectedly shoots from off camera. Like a... Kind mm-hmm. of like stop, you're on my land kind of shot.
Yep.
And it happened to come from the left-hand side of the sound space. And it sound and you and it moved. Like there was spatial orientation of the shot. It was very well done. So it moved from the front and back left speakers through the center and sub to the right. And so everyone in the room ducked. Because it sounded like some fucking nut job had just shot through my window at us. And we all had that moment of like looking around, like kind of giggling, like that was awesome. But I always tell people, if you want to know what surround sound is, man, you watch Your Brother Where Art Thou.
So I'm still playing No Man's Sky, and it's still kind of pissing me off.
It's more now.
They
rebroke it.
So I'm like 100 plus hours in.
Are you just walking around a planet?
Did you describe it as this, or did I read this somewhere? Because it has been described as more of a hobby than the game, which is completely true.
No, I didn't say that. Okay. Because again, I've never played it.
Yeah. It is though. It's more of like it's more of this sort of interesting thing that you do. Well, interesting is very subjective.
Yeah, interesting to you.
Of course. And much less of I'm trying to get to the next level on this game because it's not that at all.
You know, Justin really liked it.
He did?
Yeah.
He got it?
Yeah, he went to the Center of the Universe and everything.
Okay. I'm just taking my sweet time. Have not got to the Center of the Universe.
Just don't do
yet.
What that one asshole did and walk the entire circumference of the planet.
Yeah, I know that was a little ridiculous.
It's like, I'm sorry.
Just to prove that you
if
can, I guess.
If you're on the spectrum, I get it. That's fine. I mean, do what you need to do. But if you're just someone with that much free time, man, go fucking talk to people. Jesus Christ.
It took him like 8 hours or something of game time?
No, I think it's 24.
24?
Took a god-awful long time of real-world time to walk around a digital fucking procedurally generated ball of ones and zeros.
But yeah, I don't think we mentioned this quite as much on the first podcast.
Or the second podcast, or the third one that we've talked about.
But the guy who made it, like, made all of these promises. Did we talk about that or not?
No, but this is in the news now. The finger pointing is just, past weekend just suddenly took off.
So I wasn't really following the hype that much.
Right.
And the guy who was, like, the main, who was running the show, the main lead developer on it, had apparently made all of these big promises. Like, it's going to have this, it's going to have that, it's going to look like this, here's a demo of it.
Well, yeah, they all had all that in the demo. That was the problem. Yeah. Like, not the interactive demo, though.
Right,
The video.
And of course, when it came out, so many of the things that had been promised,
stripped right out,
or shown, uh-huh. are just gone.
Yeah,
and there are these big structures that they're very rare, but you can find them.
The portals.
They're called portals. They don't do anything.
There's a mod now to make them do stuff.
Yeah, but you have to like. Somebody else had to make them do things.
Right, which is just hilarious to me.
So they're just sort of this leftover artifact of something that was supposed to be in the game but doesn't do anything now. And this more than anything else is why there was such a negative backlash against the game right after it came out.
This is not unheard of for that to happen.
Yeah, but this is extreme.
But yeah, this is why
the user reviews on it. If you go to Metacritic, I think we talked about that. The Metacritic review from the users is like, it's absurdly low.
Yeah.
And that's why, because people feel, and rightly so, I can't argue with them, that like, this isn't what I was told was going to be in this game.
It's, I get it. I absolutely get it. If you are that concerned and that gullible, then you need to fucking wait and not pre-order the game and wait for the reviews. I don't...
Yeah, there's truth to that.
I am not on the side of the gamers here. I got to be honest. Because I don't believe in pre-ordering games. And I believe if you do, it's like playing the fucking lotto. You don't get a right to complain if the game's not good.
Yeah.
You don't. because you are feeding into a system that is only going to make it happen again and again. Seriously. But, I mean, all the signs are there in retrospect. Non-interactive demos that look really good. You know, a hype machine that took on a life of its own. Exclusivity. These are all bad things.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it was developed for a console first and foremost, and then it was also released for the PC. That's a really bad sign as a pretty big PC gamer.
Yeah.
You know, you're just intrinsically going to have issues there, but...
But anyway, on my main rig, where I had I installed the your old but still amazing video card,
980 Ti. You basically took an old GTI and you put a Corvette engine in it.
Yeah, only the transmission is still not up to snuff. So my 6-plus-year-old CPU, which was decent for the time, is just completely overwhelmed.
I wish I had my phone down here. I got a text from a coworker who's just listened to an older episode of ours, Nerdcore.
Yeah.
And she sent a picture of her 6-year-old Republic of Gamers 17-inch gaming laptop.
Ah!
I was like, oh, there it is.
So, yeah, I'd finally gotten it. So it was running reasonably well on that system.
Right.
And then...
Which took work and money.
Some tweaking. For those of you keeping score, I got a new SSD for that, and
new hard drive, new very powerful graphics card.
Yeah, and I first did just a migration on my old hard drive. It wasn't really I wasn't happy with it, so I did a completely fresh install of Windows.
Not a quick thing to do.
A wipe and a new install on that.
Did you
SSD.
Install the fan?
I got a new fan for the CPU.
You must have used stock gel again.
Yeah.
For shame. So you did a full rewipe or a full wipe and reinstall of your OS.
There's nothing else on it. There's no other things that are installed.
What about RAM?
It's got 8 gig, which is
fine.
Yeah,
that's sufficient.
But it was running all right. And then the last update, which was like 4 or 5 days ago, and now it's just choppy.
That's awful. Because they patched it, trying to make it better.
Yeah, and I guess it made it better for some people, but not me.
That's harsh. That's rough. Well, we can end, so you can go play more No Man's Sky.
On my other computer, which is actually running pretty well on.
On
my PC? My media PC,
so you're back to playing it on that now?
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
It actually plays better with a controller and some of the stuff.
Yeah, because it's made for PS4. Of course it does. You are
S. Michael Smith, and you are
M. Michael Carassi. We are
Buddies in Space.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. I don't know why I'm doing that voice. That voice got stupider as I went.
I don't know.
Looking Forward is ramping up. Is about just over, what is it, September... So there's just under 2 months left, obviously,
of
the electoral storyline that is happening.
Yeah. not the real one, the one you're involved in.
Yes, which is only slightly more ridiculous than the real one, weirdly enough. Actually, at this point, it may have been eclipsed by the real election. But yeah, so it's all building to a head, and I got like 3 episodes left, and then I'm done. Clint Westfall is done, and he might be
Are you going to kill him?
He might be done.
Whoa.
I don't know. I have to talk to Jason to figure out what the final steps are. No, I think it'll go out with a whimper for Clint.
Aw.
But he's going to peak in another 2 episodes. The next 2 episodes.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Like a reverse phoenix or a crashing plane.
What?
That then levels out.
He's going to turn out to be Jean Grey?
Yes, and he's going to totally fucking ruin X-Men 3.
Okay.
Actually, that was Brett Ratner, to be fair. I know. Let's make Rogue... I don't think he's British. I don't know why I did. But let's make Rogue lose her powers. And let's kill Cyclops so he can go do that awful Superman movie. And what else do we do? Oh, fucking make Archangel kind of stupid. And make Dark Phoenix stupid. Oh, and then we have a romance cover scene where Wolverine's got a shirt all ripped. And he's holding, you know, Jean Grey, and he's like, Jean, and there's water spraying everywhere. It was a stupid fucking movie. X-Men 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Of that part of the franchise.
Yeah.
All right, go play No Man's Sky, you hooser.
Go watch Kubo.
Oh, yeah. Watch Kubo and the Two Strings. Like, now. Like, run. Like, don't even stop this podcast. Grab your keys and your wallet and run out of the house. Get into your car and drive immediately to the theater. And we'll wait. We'll be right here waiting.
Go ahead.
Did you go yet?
We're still waiting.
How was it? Go. Was it good? Go. Did you go? Did you like it?
Nice.
Yeah, told you so.
Yeah.
High five, bro.